Hello and welcome. You've tuned into Active Listening with T4 Tactics. I'm Marco Galbraith, your host, and our podcast is all about personal success and networking. We'll discuss small business tips, health and wellness issues, personal safety tips, financial gain, and a variety of other topics from professionals in the field. And once in a while, we'll throw in our area of expertise, firearm safety and active shooter response for businesses, churches, and schools. So sit back, relax, listen and learn. Active Listening with T4 Tactics. All right, June 14th, 2023. We've got Dan Abbott back with us again. He's done a podcast, it's probably been a year or two ago, and Michaela Parker from Firearms Legal Protection. Michaela, say hello. Michaela's very shy. Wow, that was an accomplishment. So Dan had a huge honor. I see Dan in the gym every once in a while, and he was telling me about what he got to do on June 6th, which was D-Day, and it's amazing. I was like, you got to do a podcast on this, because the information he was telling me is information that we don't hear. And him and I were talking in the gym about how different it was during World War II as compared to now, what we're seeing now. So tell them your background, Dan, just in case they don't know.
Sure.
What do you do? I mean, your background and then what your assignments are right now.
Well, so I work for the Virginia Army National Guard, you know, like an M-Day soldier, so the 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year kind of thing. And I had an opportunity to go to Normandy this year for D-Day. It ends up being like a 10-day trip, and we do a whole slew of ceremonies kind of leading up to, and then, of course, actually on D-Day, we do a ceremony or a bunch of ceremonies in that whole Omaha and Utah Beach area and near the National American Cemetery at Normandy. And it was just a phenomenal opportunity, you know, I'm not sure that there's a higher honor for a service member than to stand on Omaha Beach at H hour, 06:30 in the morning, holding the national colors.
The American flag.
Yeah, the American flag.
And you got pictures of this. You were showing me pictures, and I got chills to think that 79 years after that, that beaching, you're standing there in uniform with the American flag at the exact same spot.
Yeah,
it was just amazing.
It was.
It's a huge honor.
It was absolutely surreal because, you know, luck of the draw or whatever you want to call it, in order for that amphibious landing to take place, they had to have a perfect storm.
Uh-huh.
The tides, the moon phase, and the weather all had to be exactly perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And June 5th leading into 6th, they had that perfect storm. We had the exact same perfect storm June 6th mm-hmm. of 2023. So the weather, the temperature, the wind, the tides, the moon, everything mm-hmm. was exactly the same as it was. And so, yeah, it was just an incredible, way more than a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah. So brag on yourself. Why were you picked? And I ask you this in the gym. Why? I know you're very good at what you do. You're a dedicated, patriotic American, but you've been getting some awards with the Guard. Why did they pick you?
Well, the Guard every year hosts a series of competitions starting at company, battalion, brigade level, working all the way up to state and ultimately regional and national levels for best soldier and best non-commissioned officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity to compete for the state non-commissioned officer of the year, which I won, and had the opportunity to represent Virginia at the Region 2 non-commissioned officer of the year competition and won that as well.
Excellent.
So I'm on my way next month to Alaska to represent the Mid-Atlantic region of the United States.
Cool. Excellent. Excellent. And so before we get into what we talked about with that actual D-Day, the things that you were hearing, talk about some of the people that you got to be with that day. That you showed me pictures standing next to.
Yeah. So, yeah, the whole dynamic there, which I never realized, and I don't think there's any way to appreciate it other than to go there and be there for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everywhere that we go, we're treated like celebrities there, as we're there as American soldiers in uniform, and I didn't understand it when I first got there. It's kind of like, well, we're supposed to be here to, you know, to commemorate or honor all the blood that was shed and all the lives that were sacrificed. And why is there this sort of festive spirit associated with this? And then finally, I encountered somebody that, you know, spoke French or spoke English very, very fluently and was able to convey to me. They're like, no, you don't understand. In America, you have July 4th, 1776. In France, we have June 6th, 1944. Yeah. This is our Independence
Day. Right.
And that gave me a whole different perspective. And you know, like 100,000 people descend on that section of like Normandy and Brittany to celebrate what was done on their behalf, to celebrate the lives that were shed to repel or to push back against the tyranny of the Nazi regime. And, you know, so you've got just thousands and thousands of people that come to that area dressed in period accurate U.S. military uniforms and driving period accurate U.S. military vehicles. And, you know, there's this whole, we call them reenactors, but they're not really reenacting anything. They're just dressing that way to recognize.
Yeah. Yeah. They're representing
the quality of the men that made that happen and the sacrifice that they made to achieve those goals.
And that's one reason why I wanted you to come on, is that we're going to talk about the quality of men. But you're standing next to some four-star generals.
Oh yeah.
In the pictures and
You know, as I'm standing on Omaha Beach at 06:30 on June 6th, I'm holding the national colors in front of the chief of the National Guard Bureau. He's a four-star general.
Wow. And,
you know, we did ceremonies with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs and the Secretary of Defense made an appearance. And, you know, this is a huge deal.
Patton, his relative?
Yes.
General Patton?
General Patton's granddaughter was there. Yeah. She was at a ton of stuff. She is all over the place.
That's cool.
She's a pretty incredible person. The importance of this is so unbelievably lost on us as Americans because it just becomes something that happened a long time ago in a place far away.
Right.
And for those people that live in Europe, that live in France, it's not that. This is recent history for them, and they have freedom, they have liberty because of what was done on those beaches and in Normandy in general.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just lost on Americans.
Yeah, it is. And the things we're getting ready to talk about is they were true badasses. You know, I mean, we talked about it in the gym. You see these guys now that were from that invasion or from that time, and they're walking with canes or wheelchairs. They're very frail. But let me tell you, I can say they were more of a badass than you and I are. I mean, they it's a completely different, other than present company, it's a completely different mindset and drive in the military today. And you've got some amazing things to say. Let's talk about some of that stuff.
Yeah, you know, I'm frustrated. You know, the modern American military, it just becomes an outflowing of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And American culture is broken, and so we end up with a high percentage of soldiers that bring that mindset that our culture has put into them into the military.
Right.
And you end up with this mindset, well, what's the minimum that I have to do? Well,
timeout card.
Yeah, well, yeah, what my timeout card and what's the minimum, you know, how much do I have to do to just get by?
Right.
And there was no one on Omaha Beach that was interested in the minimum.
No way.
There was no room for
them. They lied about their age to get in there.
That's right.
So they could go. They were too young to go, and they lied about their age.
And, you know,
wouldn't see that now.
I walked through, you know, the National Cemetery, and I walked through some of the memorials and the museums and the stuff over there, and I'm looking at some of the statistics for what took place on that day and the whole campaign through Normandy and the liberation of France and all that. And the numbers are staggering. The blood that was shed, it's just mind blowing. And we just don't have men like that.
No.
We just have a small percentage of men that are like that. And it was unbelievably sobering to walk through those museums and to look at those statistics and to read some of the quotes from some of the men that were there on that day is just absolutely incredible. And you know, there's a lot that I just didn't have an appreciation for, like you know, for instance, the Hitler's Atlantic Wall was, I think, like 1,600 miles long. It was staffed by 1.7 million soldiers.
1.7 million German soldiers.
7 million German soldiers staffed that line.
Wow. And we broke it. We did it.
Yeah, we did what was supposed to be that couldn't be done.
And you were telling me, see, I didn't realize all the little tiny dynamics. You see on movies, the boats came up, they ran aground, they couldn't go anymore. The guys jump out, they're over their head, they're sinking, they're drowning. Mm-hmm. But you were telling me that you had heard that some of them, they were seasick. So not only are you getting off the boat and you're hearing bullets hit and you're hearing screams and all this kind of stuff, but you're dizzy, you're sick at your stomach, you're lightheaded, and you got to jump out of that boat and get up that beach.
Yeah, the vast majority of those dudes were seasick. You know, if you understood the scope of that operation, between 06:30 and midnight on June 6th, we amphibiously landed 159,000 soldiers. On those beaches.
Wow.
So the timeline and the facilities available to load all of those landing craft in England the day and the night before, it's not like guys just jumped on a boat and ran across the channel.
Right.
No, these guys spent the entire night on boats, either in staging areas or getting loaded or crossing the channel, whatever. And the seas were bad. They were rough.
Yeah.
Some of the boats sank.
Yeah.
And also those landing craft, they can't see out of. So they're just being tossed in the surf incessantly for hours and hours and hours.
With all kinds of horrible sounds and sensory overload that you know that gate's getting ready to open.
That's right.
And it's going to be hell, literally hell.
And they have absolutely no idea what to expect when the ramp drops.
Because you can't see out.
You can't see out.
And you're sick.
And these guys are all seasick as they're trying to storm the beaches through withering machine gun fire and landmines and artillery strikes and the whole nine yards. And reading some of those quotes, it's just, so Lieutenant General Omar Bradley, commanding general, U.S. First Army, Omaha Beach was a nightmare. Every man who set foot on Omaha Beach that day was a hero. And, some of the, it's easy for someone in command that's just kind of looking down on high to say something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you start looking at the quotes, this is a quote from a Sergeant Thomas Valance, 116th Infantry Regiment, 29th Division. You have to bear with me. I'm going to try to get through this without. The bodies of my buddies were washing ashore, and I was the one live body among so many of my friends, all of whom were dead. Mm. In many cases, very severely blown to pieces. I don't know that we have men in America that can stomach that.
We don't. Now we don't.
We do.
I won't bash the military. I know a lot of guys that would do it, but I think for the majority, I think they would have turned around or they said, I'm not going out there. They would say that. It's a completely different world. Mm-hmm. That's why we wanted to do this podcast, to honor those guys. It's amazing.
Yeah. And so this is an excerpt from the 505th Parachute Infantry Regiment After Action Report. Lieutenant Turnbull was hardly in position before the enemy attacked with a force outnumbering the defenders about 5-1. A little bit of context, they were holding a bridge inland from the beachheads at Normandy to try to deny reinforcements to the beachhead so that we could actually succeed there. Outnumbering the defenders about 5-1, the platoon fought stubbornly for 8 hours and held its ground. The cost of the platoon's gallant stand was heavy. Only 16 of 42 men survived.
Mm. And talk about the grappling hook.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is interesting.
There's a peninsula there that is entirely cliff line. It's called Point de Hoc. And the intelligence said that the Germans had a battery of 155-millimeter guns on top of that point, which had the ability to range the beaches in both directions, all the way down Omaha and all the way down Utah, and would basically stop us dead in our tracks. The 155s are capable of just absolutely decimating anything that we can bring to the table. And so there were two battalions of Rangers that were tasked with climbing to the top of that hill. And, it's a borderline unscalable cliff.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did is they took these huge grappling hooks. They're probably 3 foot in diameter and maybe 5 foot long, and attached ropes to them and attached a rocket propulsion system and then bolted them to the decks of the landing craft, tipped at an angle. And the idea was that as the landing craft came ashore, they could launch these rocket propelled huge grappling hooks up over the cliffs, and then they could pull ropes and rope ladders up and scale the cliffs. Well, what we failed to take into consideration is as these landing craft were battered by the storm and the surf all night long, it saturated the ropes.
And made them heavy.
Made them enormously heavy. And the rocket launchers did not have the oomph to propel the saturated ropes and grappling hooks up over the cliffs. So the Rangers are completely undaunted. They unbolt and rip the grappling hooks and their stands and rocket launcher things off the decks of the landing craft and drag them ashore and drag them up to the base of the cliffs so that they're close enough that they have enough range to shoot them up over the cliffs anyways. And
if you
all
think
of this under direct fire
from that's what I was gonna say.
The top of the cliffs.
Yeah. You're getting shot at. Literally guys behind you, all sides of you are getting blown up and shot. And you're thinking enough to be able to, we got to unhook this thing, unbolt it, and we got to press through as people are falling around you.
Brings a whole different perspective to adapt and overcome.
Yeah.
These guys were not going to be thwarted. They were not going to fail under any
circumstances. The definition of alpha male is right there.
That's exactly
a true alpha male. Boom, get it done. Fullest respect for those guys.
This is just a slide. The slide is titled The Human Cost. D-Day took a terrible toll on the Allied troops. While precise figures are difficult to estimate, approximately 8,500 were killed, wounded, or missing in action. Omaha Beach, 43,250 landed. They took 3,000 casualties. The American paratroopers, 14,000 of them were dropped. Approximately 2,500 were taken as casualties. And probably the most sobering of these, there's a whole bunch of other statistics there from the other beaches, but one of the most sobering is in a June 1944 report, Field Marshal Rommel, German Army, cites 250,000 German soldiers killed, wounded, or missing for the month, including 28 generals. So the price that the Germans paid was unbelievably high, too.
Right.
And like kind of the continuation of that, this slide is titled The Price of... Or slide, it's a picture from a museum. It's titled The Price of Freedom. The advance towards Paris comes... Bear with me.
Yep.
The advance toward Paris comes at a heavy cost. After almost 3 months of fighting in Normandy, Allied losses total more than 225,000 dead.
Wow.
This number includes 134,000 Americans and 91,000 Brits, Canadians, and Poles who fought under the 21st Army Group. An estimated 18,000 French civilians are killed during the campaign.
Wow.
Germany suffers more than 400,000 casualties in the retreat across France.
That's amazing. You don't hear these statistics.
No, you don't. We don't have any grasp or any appreciation for a price like that being paid.
No.
We just don't.
No.
And it's very telling to me how much the French appreciate what was done,
mm-hmm.
because if you look at the number of French civilians that were killed as collateral damage, and
mm-hmm.
we tell you right now, the vast majority of that is collateral damage from our bombing campaigns.
Yeah.
And nevertheless, they treat us like heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And talk about, you told me the guys were out looking for mines with the morphine, and they're still, down and out. Talk about that. That's amazing. Amazing fortitude.
What you're talking about is the sappers, the combat engineers that were the first ones onto the beaches at Omaha that were tasked with clearing stuff like minefields and breaching obstacles so that the infantry could get through. Numbers-wise, they're a minuscule fraction compared to the infantry, but they are the ones that made the hole. And so I'm gonna read this, or I'm gonna try to read it. The entire beach and hillside was covered with obstacles. A unit of sappers had gone ahead to find where the mines were. Those guys were smack in the middle of it. German bullets coming down from up top, and our bullets going back the other way, with mortars landing everywhere. They moved in pairs. If one went down, his partner picked up his kit and kept moving. They didn't call for a single medic. They just kept crawling up the beach as far as they could until they couldn't no more. You could see them pulling themselves up the hillside even after their legs got shattered from the explosions. I remember all of their bodies had marker flags sticking out of them. The dirt was too loose to hold the flags up, and the blast would have knocked them over. So the guys had shot themselves up with morphine and stuck the flags in their own legs. When they got to one that was still breathing, he would tell us where it was safe to step.
Mm-hmm. He's dying, and he's still trying to protect people. He knows he's dying.
They were about 25 yards apart. When I got to the base of the hill, I took a quick look back, and that's when I saw it. The sappers had made a trail with their own bodies. Now, how do you not keep going after seeing something like that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a quote from a Sergeant Gino Merrill, H Company, 2nd Battalion, 18th Infantry, 1st ID, Omaha Beach, Normandy.
You would never, ever, ever see that today. That would be very rare to keep fighting and fighting and fighting. We don't make them like that anymore. Yeah, we do. There's great people in the military, but I think on the majority, you just don't see that. You wouldn't see that. We don't have. I mean, these guys were true, like I said, alpha men. They're true heroes. Amazing.
We don't have that kind of culture anymore.
Yeah. We don't. We don't.
We don't have a culture that's willing to sacrifice for other people.
I'm not going further. I don't have to. You can't make me. I'm not getting off this boat. You can't make me.
Yeah. But the whole experience was just unbelievably sobering.
Yeah.
It was just absolutely incredible to see both the appreciation from, you know, the people from that whole area, because it's not just the French, people from that whole part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
There were tons of people from the Netherlands and from Belgium. There were tons of people that had come over from England. And of course, you know, tons of people from all over Normandy and Brittany and France. And just the outpouring of gratitude from them was absolutely unreal. And to look at stuff like that, the National Cemetery, the D-Day American Cemetery was absolutely unreal.
Well, the picture of the wall that you showed me from the beach looking up and then looking down, this huge cliff that they had to climb, impossible. They did it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm looking at your pictures and I'm like, there's no way there's no way I could do it on a beautiful day like today. Mm-hmm. And now you're getting under fire and explosions and bombs and stress, and I'm going to it. I'm doing it.
Yeah.
They're getting up there.
And, you know, there's a song written by a band called Sabaton. The title of the song is Price of a Mile.
Yeah.
And it's talking about the Passchendaele campaign from World War I and how many lives were spent there. But I think that's a very accurate way to look at it. You know, we basically assessed a price to taking those cliffs.
Yeah.
And these men paid to conquer those cliffs in blood and in lives.
Right, right. And, I've seen movies of Normandy, and it's not the cliffs that you showed me in the picture. They make it more like sand dunes.
Yeah, yeah.
In the movies, and I'm like, that's nothing like what it was.
There are parts of those beaches that are essentially sand dunes or bluffs, is what they are. But
and rock. Yeah, one picture you showed me was a lot of rock. You're not running across that fast.
No, and the other thing that I'm not sure that we really appreciate there is the way those beaches are. They're a very, very shallow pitch. When the tide is out, which is the only way that we could land, is with the tide all the way out, because there were so many obstacles on the beaches it would sink our craft otherwise.
Yeah.
It is like 800 to 1,000 meters from the edge of the surf where they would have to disembark to the seawall.
Right.
And that doesn't even include conquering the bluffs.
Right.
And that 800 meters is just a monstrous killing field.
Yeah.
There's zero cover. It's a beach.
Yeah. And weren't you telling me, I know we talk about a lot of different things, but weren't you telling me on Normandy that where we had to advance forward, but we're not going to fire on them because we didn't know if they were Americans or not?
That was during the Normandy campaign.
Yeah.
That was outside the city of St. Lô. And what had happened is, so St. Lô was being heavily reinforced by the Germans. That was their point, that they were going to try to make a breakout and break through our line before Operation Cobra. And we were pushing, trying to take the city. And of course, as units advance, they're supposed to be advancing with adjacent units. Well, one of those units made very good progress, but unfortunately they advanced ahead of the adjacent units and they became surrounded and cut off.
Yeah.
And it took us quite a bit of time to be able to get back to them. And we didn't know exactly where they were, and they were under heavy fire. And so the battalion commander for the battalion that got tasked to rescue them made the decision that because we didn't know where the Americans were, he wasn't willing to take a chance on killing our own men. Mm-hmm. So he gave the order to use nothing but bayonets. And that's what they did. They took the position with nothing but bayonets. Wow. And did not return fire when they received it because they were unwilling to take a chance on killing their comrades.
Again, true badasses. That's the only way you can say it.
Yeah.
We're not going to fire because we don't know if it's our guys or not. We're going to do it by bayonets.
Yeah.
Who thinks that way? I mean, it's hard to fathom that. I mean, that was the right thing to do at the time. And it's hard to fathom that, wow. That's full honor. That's full respect.
Yeah, that was,
in my book.
That was, I believe it was 1st Battalion, 116th Infantry Regiment, 29th Infantry Division.
Yeah.
Which, you know, all of our Virginia Guard guys are 116th Infantry Regiment, 29th ID.
Yeah.
So that hits pretty close to home for them.
I wish we still had that mindset in this country today, just all around, just to work hard and get it done. But we
somehow need to rescue our culture.
Yeah.
We need to fix whatever has happened to our culture in America.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we would have that kind of self-sacrificing men again.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough call. I don't know if we'll ever see that again.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that little saying that hard times create strong men.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
right.
Hard times are on their way.
Oh, they are. We're in them now, but it's going to get a lot worse. And people had better prepare. I constantly tell people, I don't sell guns, I don't sell ammo, but you have to prepare. You have got to be ready to defend your home and probably your country the way it's coming. Michaela, do you have anything to say? Anything at all? Do you want to give an FLP plug before we close out?
I would not.
Would not. Michaela is very shy on camera and on
it stresses me out.
On microphone. But you're so firearms legal protection is legal defense for self-defense. And it's the air conditioning coming on. I guess that's telling us that we're done. Yeah, yeah. That was good, Dan Abbott. I with the Virginia National Guard. I appreciate you coming in. When he was telling me about it at the gym, I just thought we got to get this on a podcast. These guys deserve for us constantly to talk about what they did on that day. And speaking of day, it's June 14th. It's Flag Day. I hope you flew your flag high and with a lot of dignity and honor today. It means a lot for Flag Day. So thank you for listening. Dan, thanks for coming out. Michaela, I really appreciate your input. You've been a blessing and a lot of great information on this podcast.
I have enjoyed
learning. Yes, thank you. Take care, everyone. You've been listening to Active Listening with T4 Tactics.